the podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Carissa. And we're going to talk about Doctor Who today. This is a very indulgent episode. You might notice that the counting was, like, really good today.
Super together.
So together. Almost as if we're in the same room.
We are. It's rare. Look at the spike in volume.
Yeah.
We're so excited.
Sorry if you're blind, if your ears have died.
There's so that one much. Person that is listening that had said to me that it's very quiet because he only listens with one headphone. And then I had responded and said, have you tried listening with two headphones? And then I fix the volume, hopefully, and that man right now is going, it's too loud. So yeah. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I think this is also the first podcast we're having someone else edit.
Yeah, so, we are. Hi, Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you for editing, Jeff.
It's nice to be in the same room with you, Carissa.
Oh, my goodness. It's so nice.
We have tea.
Well, I water. Have tea. You've somehow given up on tea. Did you just make tea for me?
I did.
Oh, now I feel bad.
Why, you're a guest in my home.
But it's a cultural thing. I just don't like when people do things for me.
That's true. You're very Canadian.
I just hate it.
I'll just drink this water.
This is really nice. We were trying to figure out a couple minutes ago when the last time we were in the same room together was.
For more than just a quick evening of sleep, really, because you had come and we overlapped just for about 8 hours.
Yeah, and we were unconscious for 7.5 of those.
Correct.
So,
it's been a bit.
Yeah. Was it? It's before Magic Live.
Would it have been when we released Shazam?
No, PCAM.
Oh, PCAM for our live episode.
We forgot. When even what? That was September?
What month are we in?
I don't know.
Carissa and I today we had sort of a meltdown for about 10 seconds when we realized it was October 7th, which is the day we're recording this. We got a lot to do.
Anyway, so how have you been, Kayla?
I'm great. We just wrapped up a tour, which I had talked about being on the tour in our last couple of episodes. I feel bad because I had significantly dawdled on releasing Misty's episode, but it was just because I lost all track of time, as you live on a tour bus and in hotel rooms and all that fun stuff. And then I took like a week-long nap after being home, and then we got it out, so that was really fun. I'm happy to be home. I'll be here through October 31st, preparing for a run at the castle for Halloween.
Yes, and so
then exciting. And then we're back on the road for a really long time, so I'm pumped for that, because we're doing a lot of really cool stuff. So yeah, how about you?
I am so done writing. I've been working. I basically took the last couple weeks to work on my book. I've put hundreds of hours into the book in the last month, and I hate writing. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
But coming up, I get to do Three of Clubs, where I'm not sure if I'm supposed to talk about this, but Zabrecki and I are doing a thing for Three of Clubs, which is a convention in Seattle. That's going to be really fun. And then also there's a few other things coming up in the next little bit, like little convention things and little... You know, I'm doing a thing with Rudy Kobe in November for the Vancouver Magic Group, and with Mike Norton. And so there's just like a lot of fun projects on the horizon that I'm using as incentive to finish working on my stupid book.
It's going to be great when it comes out.
I really hope so.
Speaking of books, can we give a quick shout out to this book? Okay, so this was brought to our attention by... one lovely human, Harrison Lampert, a.k.a. My fiancé. he performed at this great... I'm holding it up like people
like
can
people
see
can
it,
see
by
it.
The
There's
way.
There's a picture.
I've started... I'm just
podcast.
Holding it like I'm about to read this book to a group of kindergartners. It's called Ronnie Turns Fear Into Fun by Ingrid Hoyos. Oh, I should have absolutely learned how to say her last name. Hi,
pedal.
Ingrid. and this book is about... a little bunny who is a girl who learns to overcome her anxiety and fear and perform magic for all of her friends.
How cute is that? So this is a book I'm buying for every little girl I've ever interacted with.
Yes.
It's really adorable. I just read it 7 seconds ago. And Ronnie Turns Fear Into Fun is honestly a book I cannot believe
that I did not write.
Oh, we're taking a picture
of it. I could have waited until we were done recording. But it's just so wonderful, and it's absolutely great for kids, but it features a little girl doing magic and doing good magic, which is exciting. So we wanted to give a quick shout out to Ingrid. Thanks for writing it.
Okay, so so I came over to Kayla's house early this morning to watch the first episode of season 11 of Doctor Who.
Woohoo!
The girl doctor.
It's a woman!
It's a lady doctor.
Oh my goodness.
And we thought this would be a great episode for a podcast, not just because we're both huge Doctor Who fans and this felt like a really fun, indulgent thing to do, but also because this is a female character that is traditionally portrayed as a man that is also a magical character. So it does have a lot of relevance to magic. And can I tell the...
Yes.
Okay, so 4 years ago, I was talking to Stan Allen, and who runs Magic Live. And Stan said something, and I misinterpreted it in a great way. So what he said was, at the time, there was a TV show out called Magicians, and it was about magicians having real powers. And he was mentioning a very specific scene in one of his talks and how he wished more magicians would watch shows like that and then take inspiration from it. And he specifically meant content-wise. He specifically meant, like, there was... Because I talked to him afterwards, and he said, oh, there was, like, this one scene where there was this trick, and it'd be cool if somebody figured out how to do that. And then we had that trick as part of the vocabulary of magic effects. But how I interpreted what he said was that it's very important for magicians to be aware of the way that magical beings are portrayed in culture, because we are falling into that same expectation. So whatever the current cultural zeitgeist is showing us magical characters doing, or problems that they're solving, that tells us a lot about where we are culturally and what significance magic has in the lives of individuals, which is hard for us to know as magicians. So it's really valuable to get an insight from places like popular culture. And I have this theory that there's sort of three things you can do with an expectation. So knowing the expectations of your audience based on the way that magic is being portrayed in popular culture is valuable, because when it comes to expectations, you can either meet them, exceed them, or subvert them, but nobody gains anything from ignoring them. So it's really important to know what's going on. So we're going to analyze the reaction to the female doctor, and also sort of the narrative they've created for the female doctor, to have a larger discussion about magical power dynamics for women in media. But also, we're just talking about Doctor Who.
Yeah. It's really, it's good that you started off with a very intellectual description of why we're doing this, because actually the rest of it is just how much we love it. So I have just a fun story that I want to share about when I found out the new Doctor was going to be a woman. So I grew up in a world of, like, I watched Linda Carter play Wonder Woman. I had seen every episode of Wonder Woman, even as a kid. I'm rewatching them all now as an adult, which is really enjoyable. I grew up watching The Golden Girls. I grew up sort of always having, right?
Yes.
From a very young age, I had strong female role models within media. And that's probably one of the reasons that I didn't feel empty not having a female role model within magic, because I just had them in general. My mother did not have a typical female, quote-unquote, female career. She was not a housewife. She wasn't a nurse. She wasn't something that really fit her gender. She was an athlete. So, like, that was... You know, for me growing up, I had always grown up with very strong female role models, especially within media. So this is back in November of 2013. So this is quite a long time ago. Peter Davison, who played a doctor in classic Doctor Who between 81 to 84, said that there will never be a female doctor. And in fact, his exact quote was, "I'll probably get into trouble for saying this, but I think it sort of has to be a man. To have a female would be like having a female James Bond. It would be a rather odd thing.
Boo.
Which is funny, because then his daughter, who is married to David Tennant, played a Time Lord in an episode.
Yep.
Of which he says that he's happy that there's a female Time Lord, but not... He also says it would be like giving him a sex change. I don't think that works. So for me reading that, it was like, oh, well, this is a show that I'm pretty obsessed with, that I watch every week and I'm rather invested in. And then to find out that basically it would just never happen was pretty sad. just a moment in life that you're like, oh yeah, that's a real bummer. Like, this is just a sad moment for the world, I think.
Which is crazy because the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, was the first one.
Which was right before Peter Davison,
yeah,
right?
Was the first one to introduce the concept of even having a female Doctor. So he was the first one to be like, to suggest that the Doctor that follow him be a female Doctor. So this is such an interesting line of, you know,
move forward, move back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tom Baker suggested that the next Doctor should be female. Then people got a little upset. And then we had the...
Peter Davison.
We had Peter Davison. Thank you.
Got you.
And so we had... So you had Peter Davison right afterwards say there couldn't possibly be a female Doctor. And this kind of back and forth insane hoopla is pretty consistent among the Doctor Who universe where we go, you know, we go never, never, never. And then we get Missy. And we go never, never, never. And then we get, you know,
River
a female
Song. River Song. Or,
So there have been all of these almost things, all these ideas, all these references. There was also one where recently Doctor Who shot another Time Lord and they regenerated as a woman.
Oh, yes. In it's in Heaven Sent, the almost last episode of season 9 with Peter Capaldi. I think it's the last episode, not counting the Christmas episode. He shoots a Time Lord and says, what regeneration are you on? I believe they say 8. And then he says, okay, and then shoots them and they come back as a woman. And so it's, we know that it's possible because we've seen the Master regenerate to Missy. We've seen that happen. Like, we've seen Time Lords regenerate per gender, race, whatever. Like, none of that matters. It just, they just regenerate.
Yeah. And so it makes perfect sense that there would be a female Doctor. And yet.
Yeah, people are saying no. And so then all of a sudden I'm in the car. I'm in the passenger seat. And I look up on Facebook and boom, new Doctor's being announced. And then they play the, and we'll link to it in this podcast as well. They play the announcement video announcing that it's going to be a woman and played by Jodie Whittaker. And it's going to be great. And I just lost it. Like, I lost my mind. I just cried for, like, 20 minutes. I was so happy.
It's so sweet.
Well, it's because it's, like, about time. Genuinely, like, about it. And I know that it, a lot of people are saying this, but about time that this role that's been played for 50-plus years by a guy and a white man is now being played by somebody who looks totally different. And what an inspirational thing to put out into the world. It's the big, it's the number one television show in the UK and obviously top television shows in the world. How, well, that, this is amazing.
That and the Great British Bake Off art.
I love the Great British Baking Show. Okay, it's we'll come back to that. We'll do a whole episode on the feminism within the Great British Baking Show.
Will we?
We'll see. Because it doesn't exist. But it's totally fine. And only women win that show.
But here's the interesting thing is that over the course of science fiction and fantasy, we have had representations of magical creatures. And this is very interesting to me, this idea of references to magical creatures in media. And these references are almost always men. Unless it's a witch, which is a very, like, Charmed is an interesting narrative about women in magic, or Practical Magic is a very interesting narrative about women in magic, but those are witches, and witches always have to deal with the idea of being persecuted and being alienated and having, like, a good-bad power dynamic, and there's some really specific things. It's like, this is the way that women are allowed to be powerful within the context of witchcraft, which was a kind of magic that we were talking about earlier is about oppression, really, and about overcoming oppression. It's a singular narrative.
Right.
Whereas the first time I saw in Star Trek a Q that was a woman, I remember thinking, what? Awesome!
Yeah.
And it was so excited. But just the fact that originally the one magic-y character in Doctor Who was cast as a man, and you look at, you know, how many women are in Harry Potter. Basically, just there's allowed to be one primary female, and even that's very modern. But then you look to something like Tolkien, and the whole Tolkien universe.
There's no women.
There's pretty much no women.
Yeah.
There's no magic women. It's a story
even
about
a
magic.
Even a species has figured out how to reproduce without women. That's a thing.
Yeah, especially in the films. So you see this environment, and yes, you know, film and television has typically been not a great representation of women, hence the Bechdel test, hence all these references. But specifically, roles that are magical roles are not roles we typically see women cast in.
Right.
So this is not just a big deal for Doctor Who. this is not just a big deal for media. This is not just a big deal for magic. Mm-hmm. It's a big cultural shift in every genre.
Yep.
Because this is going to, I do genuinely think this is going to affect the way that people see magic in a little
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely.
Because this is a magical creature that is a woman, and we get to see how women yield power.
Yeah.
Magical, supernatural power.
Yeah. And so the first episode came out this morning.
And we watched it.
And we watched it, and it was, if you haven't watched it, we will not spoil anything. So it came out this morning, and we watched it, and it really is, like, it felt really good to hear a woman say, I mean, when she was like, I'm the doctor, we both cheered.
We did both cheer.
And it feels really good to have, very obnoxiously, but proudly. It just felt good to have a woman be in this position where you know that young kids are watching this and people are watching it, and you're watching people go, oh my gosh, a woman can not only have, like, a powerful role, but also have a powerful and magical ability role. Like, then that, as you said, is only going to translate to help magicians and inspire magicians to understand this as well, which is so exciting. So
I would love to talk, because this is, if we're going to try and avoid spoilers, I think we should talk about the costume.
Yeah, because that's something costume. You can look up. Yes.
And
it's been announced.
It's been announced. They don't reveal it till the end of the episode, but we can still look at it.
They revealed the costume months ago.
Right, but within the episode,
yes,
they don't reveal it till the end. And I love this costume. Now, you have some insight into some of the practical reasons why it was selected.
Yes, so Jodie Whittaker, who is the actor playing the Doctor, you might know her from Broadchurch, she and other things, but that's the one everybody keeps referencing. So I listened to a couple of interviews with her, and she was pretty prevalent in making the decision on the costume amongst everybody, but her input was very much taken into consideration. Her big thing was that with all of the jumping, running, falling, diving, all of the things she was doing, she did not want to be in a dress, and she didn't want to be in – she says in one of the interviews, I think it was the one on Colbert the other night, where she says that a lot of superheroes, a lot of women who are superheroes, they wear costumes that are either – spandex suction cupped to their bodies, and then, like, if they actually were fighting, there's no way that costume would comfortably stay on. So she was like, no, I want it to be comfortable and feel okay, like, doing all of the things that I was doing. So we'll put up a picture of it, but it's got suspenders, it's comfortable pants, comfortable shirt, big jacket. Yeah. It's not, in fact, at all form-fitting on her in any way, which a lot of the Doctors, their costumes were a little bit more form-fitting.
Yeah.
She's very, I mean, she looks just so comfortable and yet also super powerful, and she looks super badass. I love it. And she's got a lot of, you've got it open if you want to talk about it, but she's got a lot of influence from a previous Doctor.
Well, I think... this is speculation.
No, she says it.
Oh, she says that it's Tom Baker.
There's a discussion on how it's a little bit, it's influenced at least, like, colors and everything by the scarf.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, I spotted that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. it looks like there's some references to Tom Baker, which I think is very, very interesting, because Tom Baker was the first Doctor to suggest that the Doctor that come after him be a female regeneration.
Yes.
So it's particularly interesting to me that this is a reference to the Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor, because that is the first Doctor that referenced there being a female Doctor. But also, that is a very silly, goofy Doctor.
Yes.
And so I think this new costume gives us some insight into what kind of character this is going to be.
Yes.
To me, already, it feels a little Tom Baker-ish. It feels a little David Tennant-y in a great way, in a way that I'm really excited about, because I love Peter Capaldi, but those episodes, that first season, man.
Yeah,
that's some torture.
There's definitely some episodes you have to sift through for really good. They Moffat really dropped the ball, in my opinion, on using Capaldi to his most value. There are some great episodes. If you watch it, there's Listen. There's I forget the actual name of the episode. I just watched it too, where he is in the in, I almost ruined it actually, but he's, it's just him.
Right.
Where he's trying to get through this maze of a castle. Episodes like that's where Capaldi is shining, where it's really him going through something, and that's amazing. But some of the other ones, the Zygon invasion was really good, I think. There were some other good ones in there, but you do have to sift through. I also was not a fan at all of this past season.
So, yeah, so this is a breath of fresh air. And then there's another thing I'm going to talk about the choices in this characterization, which is the haircut. I know this is a weird thing to say, but within the universe of culture, the general culture, long hair is very sexual, right? A long hair is very sexual. This hair is short and blonde and scruffy and, again, very almost like this is gonna sound crazy, but it's the kind of haircut you could go to a hairstylist and go, I just want to like wake up in the morning, wash my hair, and go.
Yes.
You know, I think is very strange. I haven't seen a woman in a popular television show in a long time have a hairstyle that is practical.
Right.
It's something I noticed right away when she came on, and I just went, oh yeah, this is a haircut for running around and jumping and climbing trees, and this is a very practical haircut.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Her hair is not super different in Broadchurch. I just think it's brown. But she's like that sort of a Jodie Whittaker haircut, I think, at least from what I know of her and what I've seen. I think it's interesting to note that they did not make her an over-sexualized doctor.
Yes, yeah.
She is very, I don't know how the words to actually use to explain it.
She's still a beautiful woman.
Yes, but she's not over-sexualized where the audience is looking at her going, damn, yes. Not like a lot of the companions in the past who have been, especially in classic Doctor Who, where they have been chosen for their sexuality and for how pretty they look in a tighter costume. She is not that. This is not about her sexuality. This is just about her being a doctor.
It's so refreshing too to see a powerful character that is more ambiguous, because one of the things we really noticed about the characters that Stephen Moffat has written over the last little bit is that he writes strong female characters that are
kind of one-dimensional and die.
Yeah, they die and they're very one-dimensional, and it's sort of what has become a little bit television shorthand for, look, a girl, she can do things. And so there's sort of two things that happen with women like that in media typically, is they're capable in a way where all of the male characters go, whoa, she can do plumbing. Whoa, she can ride a horse. There's always that moment where it's like, she can do something. Yes. You're surprised.
Yes.
But there isn't an assumption of competence.
Yes.
There is an assumption of incompetence. Then she proves her competence, and then she gets to play nice with the boys. But none of the men in the show have to prove that they're competent.
Right, they're just the doctor. We know that they're competent. Or they're just someone that's helping. We know that they're competent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's been very frustrating with the characters in this series and with a lot of science fiction. Or you get the strong female character that's basically just masculine, where there's only one way a woman can be strong, and that is the way a man is strong, the end. But what I have noticed about the doctors in particular is the doctors don't feel that male.
Right.
Right? Like, Tennant didn't feel super male.
Right.
Matt didn't feel super male. Mm-mm. But Capaldi did, but I think not that much more than...
Right.
Right? Like, they've always felt a little gender neutral in a way. Like, they didn't feel effeminate and they didn't feel hyper masculine.
Yes. And they definitely span a pretty large spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, but I've never, except for maybe the first Doctor in the reboot, who I thought was very, very masculine.
Chris Eccleston.
Chris Eccleston, yeah. For sure.
That entire season was literally like, hey guys, just reminding you what Doctor Who is.
Yeah.
Now let's get rid of Eccleston.
Yeah, there's some mannequins, they run around. Yeah. Look, Doctor Who is back. Okay, let's not. Yeah, he's the doctor that almost doesn't exist.
Yes, he's presenting a lot of information.
Yeah, so he's the exposition doctor.
Yes.
but, from Tennant moving forward, we don't have doctors in the modern seasons that are super masculine.
Right.
And so what I love about this is she's not super feminine and she's not super masculine. She hit that exact perfect tone of feeling like a Doctor Who.
Yes.
I watched today with you the whole time thinking, that's Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It's undeniable. It feels perfect. Mm-hmm. And what we don't, what we might not recognize is that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
That's a huge deal that she was able to figure out the Dr. Whoiness and make it her own and come up with this new persona and this new, and every doctor has to do it.
Yes.
But this is, right. She's got no reference point for how to do this as a woman, and she hit the nail on the head.
If you watch interviews with her, she just is the doctor as a human being.
Oh, that's so great.
So when she was, you know, she's acting, obviously, but it reminded me just of the interviews I've seen of her where she's very playful and in a sense a little bit puppy-like, where she's just like, I'm just excited to be in the world. I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
And then she really brought that into this. I'm so excited to see where she and the writers, who, by the way, the writing team, significant percentage of them are of a minority race, which has never happened before. So it's really exciting to see sort of the changes that are existing in such a prevalent television show. And not to really continue to hit Moffat over the head, but I'm going to a little bit, is that Moffat, as brilliant of a writer as he is, I mean, Sherlock, obviously, and all everything with The Crack in the Wall, The Silence, like everything he's done is so clever and well thought out, as is his general dislike of women. Like, it's very, very clear. He's spoken about it. He's been confronted on it before. You can tell that he enjoys writing very strong women who do strong well, who don't really do anything else well except fall in love or in obsession with the doctor, and then who die. That is the progression of every woman he's written within the story of Doctor Who. There's even a one-off, one-episode character where they have the war over with Amy Pond overtaking her baby. I don't remember what this episode is called. I could have looked it up, but I'm just not going to. You guys get it.
It's not important.
Where there's a woman there and she's fighting against, she's fighting for the resistance against the doctor, but she joined the resistance so that she could meet the doctor again because she met him as a girl and became infatuated with him and obsessed. And so now she's here. And guess what happens to her? Yep. She dies. She dies at the end because she saved the doctor. Like, she dies.
Should we say spoiler alert?
No, this is really old.
Yeah, but I mean, spoiler alert.
Guys, if you haven't seen this episode yet, this podcast episode is not going to be interesting to you. If you don't know what I'm talking about right now from season 6, this is not interesting to you.
Yeah.
So anyway, hi everyone. It's very exciting to see the diversity shift that is happening in such a prevalent show. And do you have that chart? Oh, do you have something?
Well, I was going to say that the writer's room does include women now.
Yes.
And one of the really interesting things up until now is there have been either pretty much no or absolutely no female writers in the writer's room for Doctor Who for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and it's very hard to write interesting, complex women without the input of interesting, complex women.
Right.
So one of the interesting things that we stumbled upon while kind of doing some research for this episode was that there was an interesting infographic that went around a little while ago implying that the new generation of Doctor Who is sexist, or that there are some sexist tendencies. And one of the things that we saw is this really cool infographic, which we're gonna put up on the thingy, about which episodes of Doctor Who, which companions actually pass the Bechdel test.
I just want to let everybody know that the episode I was just talking about is from season 6 called A Good Man Goes to War, which I could have just guessed because that is logically what it is, with the headless monks, and we all know what happens. Anyway, keep going.
You would not have been able to sleep at night. I know things.
Yeah.
So this is a test that was popularized by Alison Bechdel to work out whether or not movies have a decent representation of women. So the Bechdel test is the following. One, it has to have at least 2 named female identified characters. 2, they have to talk to each other. 3, they have to talk about something besides a man. So there was this fantastic a group of people who used a huge movie database of almost 8,000 movies.
Oh my goodness.
And out of 8,000 movies chosen at random, 57% of them passed all three.
57.7.
57.7 passed all three criteria. So they had two named women, female characters.
Passed.
That passed, yeah. So almost half of the movies did not pass all three. So
10% passed two.
Yeah, 10% more had at least two of those criteria. Oh my goodness. And another 22% had one. And 10% of all movies didn't do either. So they didn't even have two female named characters. 10% of movies don't even have two female named characters.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so also, if you want to know more about the Bechdel test, may we recommend the Bechdel podcast.
So good. The Bechdel cast.
The Bechdel cast. It is so good. Krissa turned me onto it recently. We've listened to every episode. Love they basically, it. These fantastic, it's just a group of wonderful women. They have guests come on. They watch a movie and then go through it with a feminist lens. And they do some great work. Disney movies, Lord of the Rings, Nothing is Safe.
Yep.
I think they just did Carrie.
Yep. It was so good. And then they figure out if the movie passes the Bechdel test, but they really use that as a jumping off point. And then they discuss it much more interesting, more deep. And then they rate the movie on their nipple scale.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite part of the podcast.
I love it. It's so great.
It's really fun. So
really
if,
recommend.
If this is something you're interested in, this idea of the media's portrayal of women, then we highly recommend listening to the Bechdel cast. We'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, we will.
In the show description. But this is a thing. Like almost half of movies don't have two named female characters who talk to each other about anything other than a man. The first episode of Doctor Who, of this new season with the female Doctor Who, passes immediately.
Yeah, within the first scene with the Doctor.
Ah!
Yeah.
So great!
Yeah, it was really great to see. We did just discuss it on the Bechdel test scale. And we're like, yeah, no, it does pass.
It immediately
does,
passes.
In fact, pass. Yeah, we have this chart, though.
Yes. Yeah, so
look at this chart.
So people were trying to figure out if Stephen Moffat, when he took over the Doctor Who series, if it became less feminist than when Russell T. Davis was doing it. And they found that Russell T. Davis passed the Bechdel test with his episodes considerably more than when Stephen Moffat was doing his episodes. So they've actually broken it down per companion. And they found that for Rose, seasons 1 and 2, in 74% of her episodes, those passed the Bechdel test. And the companion tends to speak for, on average, 2 minutes and 37 seconds of the total film. Total
per episode?
Yes.
Rose speaks, on average, 2.5 minutes per episode, per a 45-minute episode. Yeah. Is that really the chart?
Yeah. Yes.
What garbage.
It's about to get worse. Okay, so then we have Martha, and Martha's
I wasn't
episodes.
A fan of Martha's seasons. No offense, Martha. Like, you get it, girl, but...
Well, but I mean, she was a very revolutionary companion in certain
ways. That's
true.
She did do a lot of good.
She did a lot of good.
Yes.
Her episodes passed the Bechdel test 78% of the time, and on average, she has 3 minutes and 15 seconds of speaking time.
That's
so
great.
More. Donna.
Dr. Donna.
Even, I don't...
My favorite.
Was she really?
Okay, no, she wasn't, but I love Catherine Tate a lot.
Me too.
And I liked the idea of... I liked the way that they portrayed Dr. Donna because they called her Dr. Donna.
Yes.
And, like, that was good. She felt very... I mean, as per this chart is showing, she passes the Bechdel test 100% of the time.
100% of her episodes.
So that's... I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish... She had some better stories, but I loved her.
She also has the most speaking time.
Yes.
So look at that. 3 minutes and 46 seconds more than any other companion.
Amazing.
Of speaking time in her episodes. And that's 16 episodes. So she didn't get the best storylines. However, she's an interesting, compelling character. And, but you know, she is a bit shrewy sometimes.
Yeah, she definitely was a specific choice in character.
I'm sorry, I just saw a freaking hummingbird.
Oh, yeah, they're out here all the time.
There's a freaking hummingbird.
Look at him.
That's a freaking...
Yeah, they like this tree a lot.
I have not seen a hummingbird live since the Dominican Republic.
Oh my God, welcome. You just look out this window all day and you'll see them.
I'm sorry, I could not continue.
Oh, it's great.
Because a hummingbird arrived.
I thought, the way your face looked, I thought there was like somebody out there about to murder us.
I was
going to
just pretend nothing happened, but no. I couldn't because it was definitely a beautiful miracle of nature that is hummingbirds.
Take a moment.
So, so the interesting thing is Rose, Martha, and Donna, these are all Russell T. Davis mm-hmm. episodes. Mm-hmm. Then we transition to Stephen.
Oh, wait, Hall. Can we also just notice that 89% of Russell T. Davies' tests or episodes pass the Bechdel test? 89%, 24 out of 27 episodes.
Yes, exactly.
So that's pretty awesome. That's seasons 1 through 4, correct?
Yeah, that's 1 through 4.
Yeah, that's great.
Then we get into Stephen Moffat's episodes.
Lord.
Where we have Amy. And keep in mind that we just had 100% with Donna. And then we drop down to 53% of.
This is
Amy's episode.
All three seasons, 5 through 7.
All three seasons. 53% pass the Bechdel test. And on average, she has 2 minutes and 35 seconds of speaking time in each episode, which is the least out of all of the companions.
And she's always talking about either Rory or the Doctor.
Yes, which is why they do not pass the Bechdel test most of the time. And so what happens then
Look at this percentage real fast, though. It went from 89% of overall episodes passing the test to 57% of the episodes passing the test.
Yes. So this is the infographic that
Stephen,
people were upset
Stephen,
about.
Stephen.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because we still have, like, this strong, interesting female character, but she's only allowed to be interested in the Doctor. And really, her relationship with the Doctor is very strange. You know, it's a very strange power dynamic.
Yeah, it was another storyline of meeting the Doctor as a young girl, mm-hmm. becoming obsessed with him mm-hmm. in some way,
yeah,
and then growing up to then see and meet him again.
Yeah. So the thing that we see here is that we've gone from, with Russell T. Davis, on average, companion speaking time goes from 3 minutes and 12 seconds down to 2 minutes and 35 seconds.
Can we also... Oh, I'm going to note the next statistic. Mm-hmm. Wow. Female speaking time.
So this is how often women are speaking as opposed to men.
Mad.
Yeah. In Russell T. Davis's episodes, it's 8 minutes and 30 seconds of female speaking time. And in Stephen Moffat's, we have 5 minutes and 46 seconds of speaking time, which is a decrease of 32%. Yeah.
I'm mad.
So this is just an interesting trend. So what I think this is just also a reflection of how everything is a pendulum swing, right? So we have this whole episode, we've been talking about this, you know, we have the fourth Doctor,
mm-hmm.
Tom Baker. Yeah, the next Doctor should be a female Doctor. Then that next Doctor is the Doctor that says there will never be a female Doctor.
Yes, right.
And then back and forth and back and forth. And then we have this with Russell T. Davis having episodes. And it gets increased, right? We have Rose passes the Bechdel test 74% of the time. Then Martha 78% of the time. Then Donna 100% of the time. Then Stephen Moffat takes over and we drop down to 53%.
My goodness.
And now we have a female Doctor. And within the first few seconds of... Yeah. That episode, we passed the Bechdel test.
Yes.
Now, the Bechdel test is just a litmus test. It's not the be-all, end-all. It doesn't...
Right.
But...
It's just a good way of looking at something and saying, how can we improve?
Mm-hmm.
So when you do start to look at these episodes going, well... Because you think, if all I said was, I need you to write a story, all you need to have is name two women, mm-hmm. give them a conversation, don't have it be about a guy, you'd think that'd be easy. Mm-hmm. You'd think, simple. It's not simple, which is the shocking thing, is when you start to look at the actual numbers, how many things fail that test. And it's like, okay, well, how do we be better? Let's look at this as a good example.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so happy that within the first couple of minutes, this first episode of season 11 passes with flying colors. Like, what a joy.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for more. She's also got she's got three companions coming in, and yep. one of them is a woman. They range in age, they range in race. I think it's going to be only positive moving forward for now.
This is the most hopeful I've ever seen you be about anything.
That's because we just watched it.
I didn't think you were capable of this. We have completely reversed roles on this show.
I'm just so happy.
This is my role. I'm supposed to be extra happy and like...
I think this is the pendulum swing away because we dove down into Moffat and we dove down into the trenches that is his anti-feminist brain. Mm-hmm. And now we are building, I think this is the pendulum swing in the other way.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you do have to go super drastic, right? Is you have to kind of go down to go up and, you know, equal and opposite reaction. And so I'm sure there will come a time where it goes mm-hmm. back the other way, because that's how the world works. But for right now, this is the upswing, I think. And absolutely. I think it can only be really great from here. So here's a great question. Why? Why have we been talking about this? This is a magician's podcast.
Yeah.
Most of you are probably gone by now.
Yeah, none of you.
You're like, I'm at the gym. No, you're not. You're a magician. It's why, like, I mean, why are we talking about this? How does this pertain to magic at all?
So first of all, I think one of the most interesting things I realized in exploring this was that the comments when it was released that there was going to be a female doctor seemed to follow a very interesting trend where they would go, I'm not sexist, but I don't hate women, but, or I'm a girl, so I can't possibly not be a feminist. There was this kind of tone.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I hear often.
Haven't we?
In the magic community.
So much.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that was something that I really wanted to address. Jumping off point with Doctor Who, even though we have talked about Doctor Who for a lot before we got to this point. The idea is anytime you're having a thought and you think, I'm not racist, but stop. And analyze that first part. That's a very telling thing. I'm not sexist, but.
Yeah, chances are the thing you're going to say next is going to be whatever you're saying you're not.
Right.
So absolutely just consider it. And it's something that I think we've heard, you know, like, I'm not sexist, but I'm only going to book one woman on my show. I'm not sexist, but I'm going to book an all women show. You can be on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not racist, but we're going to do an all African-American show as opposed to booking you throughout the week of the convention. I mean, how we have heard this so many times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not, I forgot where I was going. Oh, I'm not sexist, but you should use more feminine music or wear more feminine clothing.
Mm-hmm.
These are all just things that we've heard over and over and over again, that if we can start to look at how the world is treating a magical creature like Doctor Who, and how we view Doctor Who in general, be, you know, this being that does wield magical powers, like you said in the beginning, see how the current zeitgeist treats this magical creature, and now that it's a woman, like, how can we as the magic community learn from how the world has rallied either around or against a female doctor?
And even with all the backlash, it feels like a big majority of the reaction around this was very, very positive. And it's the same with Wonder Woman. When Wonder Woman came out, most people went, holy moly, this is amazing. And there was a loud minority of people that were very upset. Same thing with Doctor Who. And so I think that's an important thing to remember when, you know, we're fighting the patriarchy, that a lot of the people who are upset, that is a loud minority a lot of the time.
Yes.
And so it's important not to let the loud drown out the most.
Yes. And I mean, Wonder Woman was a terrible movie, but
many things. This is another episode.
Such another episode. I have thoughts. But I also remember grew up with a very different Wonder Woman. I have a preconceived notion of what I believe Wonder Woman should be, and the feminist icon that Linda Carter's Wonder Woman was comparatively. But with Doctor Who, this is it. This is the first entry into a feminine magical creature that doesn't need anybody else right now. She's got companions, but right now she just is strong and powerful. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at in episode one. It's like she was about to leave. I was about to spoil something. But
don't
like,
spoil it!
This is not a spoiler, but at the end of the episode, she's like, bye. And that was it. It's like, oh, okay, cool. So, it's great. I think it's going to be really good. And within the magic community, I'm excited to take notes from how Jodie Whittaker plays Doctor Who, mm-hmm. and how her companions exist, because how she treats the companions and the companions interact with her, I think is a good, good point to note as a magician with calling up audience volunteers, mm-hmm. or if you've got a cast of people behind you, how do you treat them? Like, you know, taking all of this, I think will be really great as a magician to like learn from how Jodie Whittaker handles this role.
Yeah.
And how I think it's written.
We also have some interesting references in her costume to Mork and Mindy. Mm. And so I think that gives us also some insight into what kind of doctor she's going to be. And I'm really excited for a woman to be allowed to be powerful and strong and not hyper feminine, not hyper sexualized, but also silly and practical. And like the boots alone. I know this is such a silly thing to reference.
The boots.
There's something in that costume, in those boots, that communicates to me. Those are butt kicking boots.
Yeah.
Those are butt kicking boots.
Those are jumping around, saving the world, butt kicking boots. There was no heel
on those.
Nope.
And there was just something in that that made me go, yeah.
It's also, if you think about growing up, like, watching Disney movies or just anything that featured, like, a prominent female role. I mean, even, I'll bring up Wonder Woman again. Wonder Woman was very sexual. I mean, incredibly sexual, right? I'm talking about Linda Carter. I'll omit the movie. You know, if you listen to the words she says, and they are very much about, there's an episode in the first season where she basically tells a man, she's like, you're not going to take credit for capturing me. The woman captured, you know, I'm saying the woman, but that's not what she said. This woman captured me. Let her kill me. Let her take the credit. And she gives these speeches, which are like, yes, female empowerment. Meanwhile, she's like falling out of her costume. And so growing up again, it's like as I've spoken about before, and you will know if you look at me, I am not over sexualized or any sexualized, because that doesn't fit me as a human. And growing up, I didn't have anybody like that. Every Disney princess, every Wonder Woman, even the Golden Girls were quite sexual most of the time. And so it's like, oh, okay, I guess that's what I have to be. Mm-hmm. But now you're seeing Jodie Whittaker not being that. And it's like, oh, okay, there is a spectrum of femininity, which we have spoken about before. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's a spectrum, and I can go anywhere along this spectrum that I choose. I don't have to be X, Y, and Z just because I'm a woman. So it's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
The world is changing.
It's a little thing, but we were very excited.
This is a whole episode.
This is a whole episode on Doctor Who. So if you enjoyed Magic in the Media, this is the first of the Magic in the Media sort of episodes, and if you hated it, we'll never do it again. But
yeah, we thought we were discussing about diving into movies like Burt Wonderstone, The Prestige, lots of movies that are about magicians or just magical things.
Yeah.
And sort of relating them back on how we can view women within the magic community, how women can learn from these movies as magical beings and things like that.
Yeah, especially because film and television represents women in a very limited way. And so exploring it in media gives us a really interesting insight into all of the ways that things are not so great. And so there's a lot of...
And getting better.
Maybe getting better. So hopeful. We're so hopeful.
So hopeful. Maybe getting worse, but then, you know, after that, maybe getting better.
Yeah, Stephen Moffat. Shush. Geesh. Which is too bad because
he'll be fine.
I mean, here's the thing. He also wrote Coupling, which I actually love.
Mm.
And so I'm disappointed because I like some of the other things he's produced.
Yeah, I mean, Sherlock was great. Yeah. Stories are great.
I can't look at these numbers, though, and not go, what? Huh?
Right.
Damn it.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I used to love Amy Pond and seasons 5 through 7. And then you're like,
yeah.
I think there's a problem here.
Yeah, it's interesting how when you start looking at things through a new lens,
they're
a little less shiny.
Especially when you look through it through a lens of, like, how did this actually affect me and the people that I care about, like, younger generations and just overall others as well. Like, how does this actually affect me? And it does.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah. And
what's great about this new character for Doctor Who as well is that I was watching her trying to figure out what stereotypical female role is she going to be yes. shoehorned into, and so far none.
Yeah, so far none. We spoke earlier about my prediction on what I think it's going to fall into, but I'm hoping it doesn't, because mm-hmm. maybe she won't fall into a stereotypical female role. And maybe she will just be like the fun traveling companion alien. And I think every doctor has, in a sense, fallen into some sort of role in a relationship with the companion, either the dad, the grandpa, the lover, or the hero.
Yeah. Or the unrequited, or the, yeah, some kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So there's something there. But maybe, and maybe Jodie Whittaker will be none of that.
Let's hope so.
And she'll just be awesome.
So you should definitely go watch the new episode of Doctor
yes.
Who.
Unless you haven't watched any of them, then go back, watch season 4, and then 5, 6, and 7, and then go back to one. A friend of mine, Michael Feldman. Hi, Michael Feldman, if you're listening. I think he maybe is. Magician told me to start with season 5. Watch through 7 and then go back. And that's what I did. And of course, now I'm obsessed. So
yeah, that is a good way to do it.
I do recommend that highly. But if you do like the idea of diving more into magic in the media and how films like this also respect or disrespect, treat in general women, let us know. Mm-hmm. Shoot us an email or a comment or all of the above, because we kind of had fun doing this.
It was super. This is one of my favorite episodes to do.
It was fun.
It was super silly.
Plus, and we might be diving into some not so fun topics within the next couple of episodes.
More serious. Yeah.
More serious, you know, it won't be just like silly conversations about fictional characters.
And her costume and her shoes.
Yay, boots.
And although we did get into percentages, so, you know.
That's true. That's boring.
No, I liked it.
Yeah, me too. I do love a good math. But if you are interested in doing if you like these, please let us know, because we want to maybe keep doing sort of this series. Yeah. But we're slowly creating different like series.
Yeah, the last thing we did with Misty is very much, you know, the internet hates women, and this is very much women in the media. And we'd love to keep doing things in terms of series, because then we can create playlists and people can specifically reference those things. But if they're not, you know, this is really for the audience. And we've been very grateful to the people who've been listening. We've got actually a much bigger audience than we ever expected.
We really thought this was going to be like 12 women.
Yeah.
Really, and a couple of parents.
Yeah, but really this has ended up being like 100 women and then 1,000 men.
There's so many people. Thank you for listening. This is awesome.
Been really nice.
Yeah, and if you also have any specific topics of stuff that you'd like us to maybe dive into, or anyone that you want us to specifically interview, let us know. We might not listen to you, but we might.
we've been listening more often than not.
Yes, we might not respond to you in a timely manner, but we do listen, and then we might say no, or we might say, oh my gosh, this is brilliant.
What a great idea. You're a genius.
Yeah, there's nowhere in the middle, though. It's either a flat no, or you're a genius.
We exist in extremes.
So just send us whatever, and we won't let you know with which one you are, so you don't have to worry about it.
But, oh my goodness. Thank you so much.
Go get Ronnie Turns Fear into Fun, because it's a great book. Watch Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Subscribe. Listen. All the fun stuff. Tell your friends.
Twitter. Instagram.
Vote.
Facebook machine. Vote.
Vote.
No, but only in America. We don't think we have an election in Canada right now.
Please, Lord, vote. great.
We did it. Thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode of Shazam. And remember,
it's all timey-wimey.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is funded in part through support from the Endowment and Development Fund of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Thank you so much for helping us out, you guys. We really appreciate it.